When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card. The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online, and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Cammeraygal people and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to. From the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water.
Yura Damarang, hello, I'm your host Luana Grant and welcome to NITV Radio for this Wednesday, the 7th of May. Coming up on today's show, a powerful and deeply personal conversation with former NRL player, professional boxer and proud Wiradjuri man Joe Williams. Joe is one of four parents featured in a groundbreaking new documentary called Seen, which explores how healing from our own childhood experiences can transform the way we parent. In this interview, Joe opens up about his own journey of fatherhood and how confronting his own trauma has reshaped his relationship with his kids. And we share a few stories from our NITV news team. But coming up first is the latest news for this Wednesday, the 7th of May.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
In this bulletin, the Northern Territory government has passed what it says are the strongest bail laws in the country. Australians being warned to get vaccinated before a possible severe flu season. And in sport, Indigenous forward Willie Rioli returns to training with his club, Port Adelaide. The Northern Territory government has passed what it says are the strongest bail laws in the country. The changes are modelled on laws in New South Wales and Victoria, but target more offences and do not differentiate between adult and youth offenders. Parliament was urgently recalled after the fatal stabbing of a Darwin shopkeeper. An 18-year-old man was charged with the murder, and police said he was on bail at the time for serious offences. It prompted community anger and a rush to make legislative change. But amid concerns the move will drive up prison rates, independent MP Justine Davis says the laws may not have been properly considered.
The government said clearly they haven't consulted any experts for this bill because they're bringing it in this state of urgency. We do need urgent solutions, but we need urgent solutions, as I said, that we know are going to work, that we know that we've thought through, that we've had time to do our job that we've been elected to do.
A damning new report has exposed poor conditions within Aboriginal health and wellbeing facilities. The report, co-authored by Infrastructure Victoria and the Victorian Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisation, audited 200 buildings used by dozens of Aboriginal community controlled groups across the state. 82% were found to need to be partially or fully repaired in the next 15 years. One facility in Victoria was described as the worst by local federal MP Julian Hill, shuttered in August due to infrastructural failure and the threat of asbestos exposure. The report calls for the Victorian government to fund and start building up to $150 million worth of related projects over the next 5 years and establish an interim fund to pay out $30 million a year for minor works and repairs. Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney has described his closed-door discussions in Washington with US President Donald Trump as wide-ranging and very constructive. Mr. Carney says he feels better about his country's relations with the United States, but he didn't see one meeting resolving the issue set off by Trump's tariff hikes. Mr. Carney also noted that Mr. Trump again referenced the idea that Canada could somehow become the 51st US state. He says he personally made it clear Canada wasn't for sale and said it was never going to happen.
I was clear there in the Oval Office, as I've been clear throughout on behalf of Canadians, that this is never going to happen. Canada is not for sale and never will be for sale. Some things, as I said in the room, some things are never for sale. And he agreed with that.
A warning, the following story may be distressing to some listeners. New South Wales police say the discovery of two young boys found dead at a property in the regional town of Coonabarabran is being treated as a double murder. The boys, aged 6 and 8, were found dead on Monday before their 66-year-old grandmother was found at the property with self-inflicted wounds and was arrested and taken to a mental health facility. Police say the grandmother was the sole carer of the boys and had moved to the small town around 11 months ago. Western Region Commander Assistant Commissioner Andrew Holland says it was difficult for the first responders.
Look, it was a very confronting situation for the young police officers involved. They've had to force entry to the house. They were first confronted with the body of a young 6-year-old boy who was located in the front bedroom. They then located the 66-year-old woman who had attempted self-harm in that location. She was immediately placed under arrest at that time. And then from that point, police did a further search of the house and located the second young child.
Nurses and doctors have detailed how Don and Gail Patterson's health deteriorated after consuming a poisonous mushroom lunch cooked by their former daughter-in-law. Erin Patterson faces the seventh day of her triple murder trial in regional Victoria after pleading not guilty to all offences against her. She is charged with the murder of Don and Gail Patterson and Gail's sister Heather Wilkinson, along with the attempted murder of Ian Wilkinson. Patient Transport Officer Cindy Hyde said she travelled to Don and Gail's home, where she found the couple vomiting and suffering from diarrhoea. The ABC is to host Professor Jackie Huggins as their inaugural Elder-in-Residence amid reports of racism at the public broadcaster. The independent Listen Loudly, Act Strongly report, commissioned by the ABC and released in October last year, revealed examples of racism ranging from staff being prevented from workplace opportunities due to a non-Anglo accent to mistaking the identity of people with the same cultural background. The review made 15 recommendations to improve the ABC's systems, processes and support for First Nations and culturally diverse staff. Outgoing ABC boss David Anderson apologised to current and former staff who have experienced racist behaviour and past harms following the publication of the report led by Dr. Terry Jenke. As she commences her role, Professor Huggins says she's already had meetings with management and staff and describes an issue she refers to as the colonial load.
And certainly if you don't have the mass, it can be much more difficult. If there's one or three people working there, you carry that. You carry your history of your people and the circumstances by which, you know, all this disparity happens in our communities. And I guess you need that armour to have that support and look after one another.
Australians are being warned to get vaccinated before a possible severe flu season after an unusual spike in cases across the country. Health officials say low vaccination rates are behind the influenza warning, but Australians have been told not to underestimate the respiratory illness as winter looms. More than 71,000 flu cases have been reported in Australia since January 1st, an unseasonally high rise. The World Health Organization says the rise in cases is unusual, 50% higher than the previous record of flu cases during January to March 2024. The Heidi Museum of Modern Art in Bullen on the outskirts of Melbourne is hosting an exhibition called Black Injustice that highlights the high rate of Indigenous incarceration. It's a collaboration with not-for-profit organisation The Torch, which provides art support for incarcerated or formerly incarcerated First Nations people. Some featured artists have been to prison themselves, and curator Kent Morris told NITV he believes the works will give visitors a sense of hope.
It's a call for action around reducing our hyper-incarceration and addressing the continuing crisis of our deaths in custody. So it brings voices together from across generations, across the country, those of who have experienced incarceration and those who have made comment on it. But it resoundingly says that this situation can't go on, needs to change, and it impacts on all of us.
The once world-leading video communication platform Skype has officially been shut down. Launched in 2003, Skype attracted over 300 million monthly users at its peak in the 2010s for offering free voice and video calls over the internet. In February, Microsoft announced the decision to shut down Skype in an effort to prioritise its other communication platform, Teams. The New South Wales government has unveiled a plan to revitalise Australia's live performance scene. Arts Minister John Graham says the government will offer international music concert tours, discounted arena hire fees at some of Australia's largest venues if they choose homegrown acts to open their shows. Just three Australian albums were in the ARIA Top 100 charts in 2024, which John Graham has labelled a crisis. New South Wales Premier Chris Minns says giving Aussie artists their first big break in front of thousands of locals will help them get higher rotation on playlists. To sport, in AFL news, Indigenous forward Willy Rioli has returned to training with his club Port Adelaide after being subjected to a torrent of online abuse that his coach Ken Hinckley has described as a disgrace. The abuse followed comments Rioli made in a post expressing his hatred for rivals Hawthorn, a club which recently settled a federal court case with his cousin Cyril over racism claims. AFL Players Association chief Paul Marsh says the backlash against Willy Rioli was racist and homophobic, while Mr. Hinckley has called for stronger social media laws. Rioli has shut down his social accounts.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
And now for a look at today's weather. Perth, sunny 27, Adelaide, showers clearing 21, Melbourne, a shower or two 20, Hobart, showers easing 15, Canberra, mostly sunny 22, Wollongong, sunny 26, Sydney, mostly sunny 27, Newcastle, mostly sunny 26, Brisbane, also mostly sunny 27, Cairns, a possible shower 29, and Darwin, mostly sunny 34. And that is NITV Radio News.
Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio. Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. Still to come on the show, a powerful and deeply personal conversation with former NRL player, professional boxer and proud Wiradjuri man Joe Williams. Joe is one of four parents featured in a groundbreaking new documentary called Scene. But first, let's take a look at some of the stories from our NITV news team.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Almost 50 young people a day are being locked up in Queensland, with the state government saying that's proof its tough on crime law are working. But First Nations justice advocates say the approach will continue the cycle of crime and are pleading for alternatives to jail.
The results of the Queensland Premier's controversial adult time for adult crime laws are in.
We promised a crackdown on youth crime, and everything we are doing is about delivering that.
The government's latest crime data shows an average of 47 young people are apprehended a day. In the first quarter of this year, over 4,000 young offenders were facing more than 18,000 charges.
The more you lock someone up, the more likely they are to be caught in a cycle of criminal offending.
The government says the crackdown has seen a 9% reduction in stolen vehicles and a 12% decline in break-ins compared to the same period last year. However, advocates argue the prison may not be an effective deterrent, instead fostering a pattern of reoffending.
What we know is those tough-on-crime laws don't work. There is no evidence anywhere in the world, let alone Australia, to say that increasing criminalisation works.
Community elders are calling for more programs to divert people away from the court system.
If we want to address the justice system, we need to address out-of-home care first, because that's where the kids are coming from. And if we can address that, we can stop a lot of kids going into crime. We want to prevent crime. We don't want to be the abusers of crime.
There are also concerns the legislation breaches UN conventions on the rights of the child. Dan Rennie, NITV News.
For millennia, First Nations people in Lutruwita, Tasmania, have had a connection to the sea, including the cultural practices of shell-stringing necklaces, diving and hunting. Work is now underway to establish the state's first sea country Indigenous protected area. Designed to support conservation, protection and management of the area, which includes ecologically important seagrass beds. Tasmania correspondent Karen Thomas has more.
Fiona Maher's connection to the sea goes back generations.
Pākehā women, we see ourselves as women of the sea. Our old women were, you know, great divers.
She's a senior ranger for the proposed Tairicha Sea Country Indigenous Protected Area.
A lot of our cultural practices rely on sea country, so all our shellfish, our mutton birds or eula, our Kanalaricha shell necklaces, all those shells are found in these waters.
The proposal for the Indigenous Protected Area is around the Furno Islands in Bass Strait, also known as Tairicha. It's the first sea country IPA for Tasmania. It will link five existing island IPAs and includes Ramsar wetlands and ecologically significant coastal habitats. The protected area won't affect other users here.
It's just about empowering our community to care for our country. Yeah, and for us, there's no disconnect between land and sea, so it's that makes it even more important.
A management plan for the area is in development, and it's already helping foster collaboration between the Tasmanian Aboriginal Centre, University of Tasmania and Deakin University.
What we're aiming to do is basically to primarily map the seagrass beds around the Furno Group, because basically they're large and extensive, probably thought to be the largest around South Australia, but they haven't been extensively mapped before.
One way the seagrass is mapped is using a benthic observation survey system, or BOSS camera. It's dropped for 2 to 5 minutes at a time, dozens of times a day, measuring the spread and length of seagrass, as well as the different species.
Studying the range of species supported by the different seagrasses, the impacts of seaweed, and trying to figure out how much carbon the seagrass beds are storing.
Seagrass is thought to be basically 2 times more efficient than some of the plants on land, but it sort of depends on the forest and where it is. And so the idea is basically to match the maps with the samples we take of blue carbon and to look up what the storage capacity is of the beds here.
Working with the rangers to build a long-term monitoring plan.
A lot of our cultural food comes from the sea. So it's very important that we keep our waters and that healthy here and mitigate any threats to sea country.
Preserving their waters for future generations. On Big Dog Island, Karen Thomas, NITV News.
Arrernte street signs have been put up all over Impantwa Alice Springs, a visible sign of the language of the traditional owners. Many of the streets in town were named in the 1970s, with officials using Arrernte words but guessing how to spell them. Now, more than 60 new signs have been put up correcting those mistakes. The street signs haven't been approved by the local council, but they have the mayor's support and none have been removed. A QR code on the Arrernte street signs links to audio with the correct pronunciation and also background on the name's meaning.
These signs aren't supposed to replace the original signs, and we're not arguing for that. They're just a value add.
Everyone should learn a bit of Arrernte. It's a beautiful language and, you know, it's what makes us unique. It's what makes Alice Springs, Alice Springs.
A colonial era story about a white woman supposedly living with Gunai Kurnai people in the Gippsland region of Victoria is the focus of a new theatre production that has premiered in Nam, Melbourne. Called The Black Woman of Gippsland, the play is based on real events of the time and tells of the catastrophic ramifications for the Gunai Kurnai stemming from an ill-fated rescue attempt by white settlers.
The cast of The Black Women of Gippsland have been rehearsing for months.
Nobody hears or sees the white woman for 3 whole years.
The play is a modern mystery about a woman trying to unravel the truth of a story from the 1830s.
There were numerous shipwrecks along the really dangerous Gunai Kurnai coast, and it was said that a white woman was washed up on the beach and had been either rescued or captured or taken hostage, and that she was taken in by Gunai Kurnai people.
Who is this yellow woman? And if she wanted to be rescued, why did she run away?
After apparent sightings in the 1840s, an expedition party made up of white men and Aboriginal troopers descended on the area. The woman was never found. But the consequences for the Gunai Kurnai were immense.
The repercussions for my people were immense. There were massacres and dispossession of country and, very sadly, our first Aboriginal death in custody.
It does pique your interest in history and how it's actually told. And it's always through the lens of, you know, the coloniser.
Andrea James has been working on the play for around 6 years and says she was very definite about what she wanted to achieve with the production.
Wanted to hold Melbourne audiences to account, to have them understand, you know, how Melbourne was involved in that story, but to also unravel the myth, you know, to disempower the white man's version of that story.
The Black Women of Gippsland is on at Melbourne South Bank Theatre until the end of May.
Where they see
Makili Siren, NITV News.
The conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio. Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. Coming up next is a powerful and deeply personal conversation with former NRL player, professional boxer and proud Wiradjuri man Joe Williams. Joe is one of four parents featured in a groundbreaking new documentary called Seen, which explores how healing from our own childhood experiences can transform the way we parent. In this interview, Joe opens up about his own journey of fatherhood and how confronting his own trauma has helped reshape his relationship with his kids.
My name is Joe Williams. I'm a Wiradjuri and Wagyu man, currently living in Dubbo.
And now, you played professional rugby league in the NRL. You're a professional boxer and you dedicated many, many years and still do advocating for mental health and suicide prevention in the community. But most importantly, you're a dad to 5 beautiful children. And recently you've been involved in a very special and important documentary called Seen. Firstly, how did you initially get involved in this project?
I think it's been a flow-on effect from the work that I've been doing in mental health and in and around the suicide prevention space for a long time. When I guess a number of years ago now, I moved away from the mental health, inverted commas, space more so to working with and understanding trauma. Mm-hmm. When you understand trauma, developmental trauma, and particularly in the younger years in life, you understand that everything that is playing out in community today, as far as behaviours go, as far as what this thing we're calling like an epidemic of mental health challenges in communities, is a very natural and normal response to the ways in which we are so disconnected as families. So looking at, you know, I just honestly believe that what we're doing as a country is probably not where we should to, where we need to be as far as addressing these challenges. You know, there's billions of dollars being pumped into mental health, and I understand that. But if you look at childhood, if you look at the development of the brain, and you understand behaviour and understand what is now being played out as mental health challenges, is that everything is a very natural response to a very unnatural environment in which we've all been exposed to in the very early years in our life. So it's been, a natural progression from, you know, looking at mental health and looking at what behavior is, which is, you know, the diagnosis of what mental health is, right? You go and you have these feelings, you have these emotions, you have these, you know, different behaviors that we get challenged by, which then we go and sought professional help and we look at what that looks like. But when you understand, the natural development of the way that the brain and the way that the body is processing throughout our entire lives, everything that we're seeing now is a very natural and normal response to a very unnatural and abnormal environment.
And the documentary explores the connection between like personal healing and how it impacts the way we parent. What was it like for you to reflect on and share your own journey in such an open and public way?
Yeah, it's always a challenge. I always tell myself I don't think I've got any tears left when I watch the screening until I watch it again. And you know, it's a very raw and very vulnerable look at different challenges that I've had throughout my parenting journey. I can't be prouder of the vulnerability that was shared by my two youngest, by my two eldest kids, now 20 and 18. I'm just so proud of what they shared. And I think as well, Luana, we can look at it and, you know, we can look at it and have a personal reflection of what it is, but it's everything that they were feeling and they were experiencing by separation between, you know, me leaving their family or our family at a very young age. So it explores the impact of growing up without a dad and you know, how that makes us feel. And the also, you know, there's a few vulnerable moments shared, but also some really challenging things for me to hear, which I need to take full accountability for and ownership, because it's, you know, it was deeply reflective of the time, but also my behaviours as a dad, particularly on my older kids, in what they experienced, you know, throughout separations.
And in seeing you openly share that, you know, after 18, 20 years of being a father, you've only been a dad for the past two. Can you talk us through that realization and what that meant for you?
Yeah, you know, it's probably a little bit more now than two, being looking at the time that it was filmed. But, you know, a couple of years ago it was filmed. It was pretty much the pandemic that really stopped me in my tracks. You know, I'd constantly been, you know, I was a sports player for many years of my life, and then, which kept me out of the home for a long time. And then there were separations, and I'd repartnered, had another child, and separations again. And then the work that I was doing in the mental health space was taking me around the country and across the world 300 odd days in the year. I realized that I'd never really spent any time at home with my kids, particularly in the early years of their life. And there is such a difference between being a father and being a dad. And, you know, a father is, you know, whilst I was trying my best, you know, there were elements of me that didn't know how to be a dad. There were elements of me that wasn't vulnerable in sharing and showing and validating emotions. So, you know, it took me to the pandemic where I was stopped in my tracks and I realized that, yeah, I'd been a father for a number of years, but I hadn't really had time as a dad with the young people in my life. And that, whilst the pandemic was extremely challenging for a hell of a lot of people, I say it respectfully, it was the best thing that ever happened to me because it forced me to stop. It forced me to slow down. And in a way, it forced me to spend time with my kids, which now, you know, I don't want to go again. You know, I love being at home with my kids. I love being able to have, you know, these conversations of vulnerability and these conversations around validating emotions because, you know, it's extremely important. You know, the early interactions with between a parent and child is foundational for how kids grow and develop throughout, you know, what they progress to later in their lives as well. So, you know, the film scene it's been shown across the country and even internationally now. It's having massive reports and people reflecting in deep and vulnerable moments and just how we can look to do things a little bit differently. You know, with respect to the older generations, and I show immense empathy to those older generations, they weren't able to open a smartphone and get the next best parenting advice in an instant where, you know, we can now and we know different. We know, you know, what's more beneficial for brain development and a kid's well-being and how we can, you know, interact with that in having the best possible scenario for the way that our young people are being raised.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. Next up is part two of my chat with Joe Williams, who is one of four parents featured in a groundbreaking new documentary called Seen, which explores how healing from our own childhood experiences can transform the way we parent. And have you had conversations like with your older two kids about how they've seen you change over the years and how like their relationship with you has like evolved as a result of you healing?
Yeah, there was actually some fairly tough audio to hear, but also tough vision to see as a dad. You know, when my older kids, I'm a very different person now. You know, not just a different dad or how I interact. I'm a very different person to what I was to them in the early years of their life. So I can understand how they can be a little bit challenged by, you know, or even upset at me because they didn't get this version of dad that the other kids are getting. You know, we've had conversations about that. We've had really deep and honest reflective moments about that. And, you know, the kids hit me pretty hard between the eyes, you know, with saying things that are challenging to hear. But, you know, throughout this filming process, I always say that this filming process and the documentary itself has been one of the most healing opportunities that we could do as a family. You know, there was a moment in the film where, you know, we all come together as a family. You know, myself and the five kids, all at very different ages. You know, where we had some deep reflective time, where we can, you know, show vulnerability and care to each other, you know, in different emotional standpoints of our life as well. So, you know, it's been a really beautiful healing process. Firstly, giving them permission to call me out on what was my behaviours, but also, you know, sitting in a place of reflection to be able to do a little bit differently and do a little bit better as well.
What are some of the biggest challenges you've had to face within yourself when it comes to breaking generational cycles?
Rather than reflecting on generational cycles, I think for me personally, because I can only speak to me, it's being one of the most challenging things we probably take for granted is sitting with our kids in presence. You know, we are more disconnected than our young people than we ever have been due to smartphones and the cost of living and the amount of time we spend out of the household with work and having to put food on the table. Sitting with our kids in presence and just stopping and listening and showing acknowledgement to who they are and the day that they've had, or talking to them, you know, particularly the younger ones, talking to them about what they learnt today, talking to them about, you know, how they had a day at school. We take for granted these things that I think even before our upbringing, Luana, where parents sat at the kitchen table and chat with their kids. Now we're so disconnected that we all sit around, you know, the lounge room and we're all on smartphones and iPads and not paying attention to each other. So for me, one of the biggest challenges as a dad has been to slow everything down, you know, the exterior world and even, you know, within me foundationally, slow everything down to try and show a bit of presence to my kids. And, you know, with that presence, it comes validation. With that validation comes safety and security with how they're feeling mentally and emotionally. So I can't recommend, you know, this film as a starting point to open some conversations within our family home about how we can do things differently and then how can we can do things that might be a little bit more beneficial to the growth and development as with our young people.
And your dad is someone that you know, speak about with a lot of love and respect. Can you share a bit about what your relationship was like growing up and how that shaped the kind of dad that you are today?
I think, you know, there's very different eras. Like I said, you know, today's era is super challenging because of, you know, the smartphone eras and iPads and stuff like that. You know, like I was really grateful to have the upbringing that I had. And, you know, I openly don't say that, you know, I'm trying to do things better. I'm just doing things differently. Mm. And that's not a reflection on anyone else, but what I'm choosing to do. I'm really grateful, as I said, for the upbringing I had with my parents. You know, sport has played a foundational part of who I was for a long time in my life. I think our kids are more challenged today than they ever have been, purely because of the influx of things like smartphones and iPads and technology. You know, the more presence we turn to our kids, where we can start to have some presence with each other, the more beneficial it's going to be. I guess reflecting, we never had a choice in our era because there wasn't any smartphones, there wasn't any technology around that sort of stuff. So you're always outside kicking the footy and you're always outside doing different things. Right now, you know, our kids' faces are planted, you know, in technology a large part of the day, you know, whether it be at school and then at home as well. We need to start having more genuine conversations with our young people to try and, I even say, rebuild relationships within our family home.
And when you think about the kind of dad that you are today, what's the most important thing that you want your kids to know or feel from you?
Safety. I think safety is the most important thing. You know, this the challenge that we have with the mental health crisis around the globe and people not speaking out is a direct result from being silenced as young people. Around what, you know, what I mean by that is that, you know, we're forever trying to make kids be quiet and push kids out of our way and out of our business, and because of as a reflection of how busy we are as people and as adults in today's society. I think safety for me is I want my kids to grow to an age where they don't say, I can't ring my dad because he'd kill me. I want my kids to say, if I need a hand, I'm the first person I'm ringing is my dad. So safety and security for me, and knowing that they can come to me with anything, any emotion, any experience, they can come to me with non-judgment, and I can say, all right, well, let's have a conversation about this. Let's try and work through it. You know, if it's challenging environments, let's work through it, and let's look to where we can do things a little bit differently and better.
It's a very important documentary, and you know, I hope that everyone goes out and watches it. Where can people go to see it? Is it at cinemas, or are there special screenings where people can go to watch Scene?
Yeah, we've just had a national tour right across the place. There was about 12 or 13 cities across a 2-week period, with I think 6,000 or 7,000 people in attendance. Around different cinemas across the country, which is fantastic. And at seenthefilm.com, there'll be all the information there around how to host their own screening, how to go out and see other screenings. There's screenings popping up all over the place now. We just saw a stack load of screenings come out in the UK and the US as well. So this documentary is a real game changer around people understanding around some of the behaviours they have and patterns they have are from our own experiences as well as parents. So, you know, get all the information at seenthefilm.com for where screenings can pop up near you.
Thank you so much for your time today chatting with us.
Thanks a lot. Always good to have conversations.
On radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
And that's all we have time for on today's program. You can listen back to the show anytime online or catch any of our stories on our website at sbs.com.au. NITV Radio will be back on Friday with more stories from right across the country. I'm your host, Luana Grant. Thanks so much for joining me and have a great day.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.